All right.
Okay, we ready? We good to go? Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Most High Show. I'm your host, Christian. We got Leslie doing quality control. My man Zach is on the ones and twos. We got Reeves here. We got Jason here. And we got an in-studio audience. And we're going to try to tackle the topic of connecting to self and how we're relating to others. So I want everybody to give a round of applause for our guests and the Most High Show tonight. Oh, it's so cool. Thank you guys all for being here. It's really quite a blessing.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
So I kind of was thinking about how to approach this in a way that maybe we haven't talked about it. And so this idea of connecting to self. And so we've told a lot of stories on the Most High Show, over 150. And people usually, and most of them, they talk about this having a sense early on, before they even drank, before they even used, that something, that they knew something about the world that someone, that the rest of the world didn't know. And people will kind of express it in a way like, I never fit in, right? Until I had that first drink, or until I had that drug. Or they'll say, I always felt on the outside of my family or my friends or my school. And I wanted to ask you guys, do you, when you think about, you know, early in your life before, you know, escaping through drugs and alcohol, did you have that sense? Did you feel on the outside, or did you feel like you knew something that the rest of the world didn't know? We'll start with Reeves.
Did I feel like I knew something that the rest of the world didn't know yet?
Or feeling like you're out on the outside?
I've always, man, I mean, yes and no. If I didn't fit in, it was because I didn't like the norm. Like, I didn't like the cool kids and the, like, I could fit in with them. You know, I played basketball and, you know, people thought I was funny or whatever, but like, I didn't like that, the cool kids. I thought other things were cool.
Yeah.
I like really outcasted myself in a way, I guess.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be like that.
Yeah.
Only even before sounds. Drugs, like I was screwed from, you know.
Yeah. All right. What about you, Jay?
I just never fit in. I was never comfortable in my own skin. Childhood trauma. But I can remember always feeling like the outsider. I was always the smallest guy. I had red hair. I started wearing glasses when I was 8. I was picked on a lot. I just really felt separated.
Yeah.
But I was never, ever comfortable, even in my own skin.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, when Leslie and I were talking about the show, and she had some really good questions because she's like a normal human. So she's like, what do you mean you didn't feel, you know? And she's like explaining how she moved here from the Philippines and didn't speak the language and didn't look like everybody, but she still didn't have that sense of like being on the outside, right? And I remember as early as in grade school, like kind of just watching everybody play and everybody like just be, and me kind of like on the grass, just kind of away and just watching, you know? And I don't know what that is, but I know that it seems to be pretty common with some of us. So you mentioned trauma. Do you think that for you in your life and the men that you've worked with in your life, do you see that? Is it a traumatic experience that kind of kicks that into gear, or do you feel like it might have been there even before that? Are we born with it, basically?
I don't know if I was born with it. From early on, I just felt insecure. You know what I mean? It didn't make any sense. My parents are great. I mean, my parents are great. I had aunts and uncles that were in my life and grandparents. I mean, I didn't have any reason just looking at it. So maybe the trauma had something to do with it. But, you know, we moved and I don't really know what it was. But I never felt like I was normal.
Yeah. Now, when you started drinking and using, did you get that sense?
See, I went through my whole high school all the way through and never used any mind-altering substances.
Oh.
I was kind of a straight-laced guy. I went to church a lot. The first time that I got high, I was laying on I was in a hospital bed, and they shot me up. I believe it was with sodium pentothal. And the doctor asked me, I said, what are you doing? What is this going to be like? And he said, it's going to be like the first time you got drunk. And I said, I've never drank. He said, it'll be like the first time you smoked weed. And I said, I've never got high. He said, it'll be like the first time you had sex. I said, I'm a virgin. He said, you're really going to like this, son. And I remember thinking, where has this been all my life? This is every single thing that I've ever wanted.
Yeah.
And I was off to the races.
Yeah.
From that moment on. I was 18.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. Yep. Reeves, what about for you? Do you feel like you were born with that kind of rebel spirit? Yeah?
Yeah. I was bad. Like, my mom used to put a leash on me when we went to the mall. I was so ADHD. Like, I'd run off and bless her heart. But... you know, I had great parents also. They split when I was in like second grade. They just didn't work. And, you know, my dad still coached the ball team. Mom was a great mom, but I just was an ass. Got in trouble at school, wanted to argue, wanted to fight. I was one of those jerks that thought it was cool to fight and that girls liked it, you know. And so by the time I was in seventh grade, I got kicked out of like three middle schools. My mom, being a single mom, there was a dude that went to our church, had a group home. My mom sent me to a Christian group home. Not because she just didn't know what to do, you know? Like, she was at work. I'm expelled from school and, you know, I'm running around acting like a jerk. And so my seventh, ninth, and 10th grade year, I was in a group home. I still went to public school. And, you know, so there, that was the first that the real out, like, you know, we rode to school in a big van, you know, and it was the group home van, and, you know, people would pick and do all this. And, like, you know, I wasn't really cool with that, you know. And
did you feel like you fit in with the group home, other people in the group home? Did you feel like that was your tribe in a sense?
Mm-hmm. I can see where you're going. Yeah, I mean, yes and no. No, I never really, you know, I hung out with a bunch of different groups and I never to one. Yeah. But I remember the first time I got high was like right at the end of this. And like you said, it was like, oh my God, this is, you know, I had sex before I got high. But I remember the first time I got high, like, I smoked some weed and was just like, oh my God, this is it. This is for me.
Yeah.
And I was like immediately addicted. That's all I wanted to think about. That's all I wanted to do. And my mama always told me when I was a kid, my dad, you know, back in the day, had drug stuff. And my mom didn't. I had uncles on my mom's side. And so it was put in my head that I was a drug addict. It was in my genes. My mama taught me that at a young age. Now, whether it was that she saw something in me, like her brother, like her dad, like my dad, and she just knew I had it, but like she always told me, the first time you get high, son, it's over with. And yeah. She was right.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't remember the first time I got high. That's how good I am at getting high. You know what I mean? Can't remember it.
Yeah.
But I do remember the crew, and I remember that being that moment, that click of like, oh, this is my tribe, these are my people, this is where I belong.
Yeah, right.
You know, maybe because we're all under this influence, we're all being rebels, we're all tagging and
I love you, man,
running around. Like, it gave me that sense of belonging. And yeah, it wasn't like my family life was, you know, there was a lot of things that happened in my childhood, but as a younger kid, you know, it was pretty much, you know, the normal kind of, at least from the perspective. I mean, when I was a kid, I didn't know they were getting high and throwing cocaine parties, you know, but it, for all I knew, it was a good life and there was love there, right? But I always had that sense of just like, you know, and then once that crew kind of got formed, it was this sense of like, okay, I belong here. We're doing something, you know? And that was such a huge part of me enjoying getting high, right? And it wasn't until much later that I would get high alone, you know? It was always kind of like that social aspect of addiction, you know?
When I was in high school, I was a misfit. I mean, I had friends that were in band, friends that were athletes. I had friends that, you know, hung out in the smoking section. I had friends that got drunk and got high and all that. I didn't get drunk and high with them. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I had friends at church, but even with this huge diverse group of friends, quote unquote friends, I just felt like they weren't my friends unless they were getting something from me. I was always a really good mechanic. So once people started driving and they needed me to do this, that, or the other, and then it'd be time to work on my car or whatever, hang out, and the some bitches would all be gone, you know?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I was just always felt like, I really felt like I was used. Yeah. I didn't ever really feel close to anybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing, I mean, like, it's a, I don't know. I mean, my limited understanding of these things, I feel like in some level we're born with it in some way. You know, and, you know, it's like we're all born with that, like, God-shaped hole, you know, mm-hmm. Some of us are. Because my experience of, like, recovery community is, I mean, we're the salt of the earth, I'm telling you. Like, there ain't nobody who, you know, will really, is more of an example of what, like, when you read the early church. I mean, I've been a part of a lot of different religious communities, and the recovery community is, like, the most accurate to that description of like really holding each other down and being there for each other and helping people with money and helping people places to stay and giving whatever you got, giving it to them and spending time with them and hours with them and for nothing.
Yeah. Right?
Because, you know, and so there's something interesting there for me, at least in my experience that I've seen, you know. And even though they don't say it, you know, we always close in the Lord's Prayer, so I don't know what that's about, but, you know, that might be a little tip to the hat. So now that when you look back, right, you're looking back at this not fitting in and you sit with other people, do you feel like the story's changed over time? And how has it changed? Let's start with Jason. He's got a little more. He's had a little more time to reflect.
I think for me, I've lowered my expectations of people. You know what I mean? It says in the big book, there's a line that says, if you want to increase your serenity, lower your expectations. It's in one of the stories. But that's very accurate. But I think that's not so much lowering my expectations. There is some of that. But I think it's more so just giving because it's the right thing to do and giving to people that are really in need. I think that makes a big difference, being able to pick and choose who I give to. That kind of sounds kind of weird, but you know, I mean, I'm a mechanic. I can fix anybody's car, but it's really cool because of where I work and what I do. I get to pick and choose whose cars I work on.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'd rather work on somebody that really needs some help and, you know, spend time with people that really need something. It makes me feel like I have value just being able to serve my community.
Yeah.
So I think it's more of a, you know, God gives us what we pray for. And a long time ago, I prayed for a servant's heart, and I didn't really know what I was getting myself into. but he gave it to me. I really believe that he did.
Yeah.
I mean, I love my community. I love the fellowship. Working with others is awesome, and I can do it really with no expectations.
Well, it sounds like you're looking for the gaps, like who are the people that are falling through mm-hmm. and that really need it, where no one else is really going to be there for them, and you want to fill that gap for those people.
Yeah.
Right? And then when you talk about lowering expectations, right? Like, it reminds me of that, like, old SNL, lowered expectations, you know? What do you mean by that, like, lowering expectations? Because it sounds negative, right?
It does.
It sounds like, okay, I just expect everyone to be a douche.
Suck.
Yeah.
Well, I worked with this guy. His name was Alan. And he said that people suck more than anybody. That was, he said it all the time. And he was absolutely right. People mm-hmm. suck, man. People will break your heart. They'll stomp on you. They'll use you. They'll abuse you. They'll walk away. And maybe you'll get lucky and they won't spit on you. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really how people will treat each other. I think when I give, if I spend time with somebody, I lower my expectations because I know what they're made of. They're made of the same stuff that I'm made out of. And I know how many times I let people down. So I guess it's just kind of a reality check. You know, I'm gonna spend this time with this person. I'm gonna do what I can, and man, pray for them. And maybe they'll get it, maybe they won't. But I think part of lowering my expectations also is just the understanding that I can't take their free will, just like nobody could ever take mine. They're gonna do what they're gonna do. But you know, being able to watch somebody go back down that hard road and pray that they make it back.
It's hard.
It's a lot easier when you know that you did everything that you could do. You know what I mean? I can remember early in recovery, a good friend of mine moved back in with his mom, and his mom was his biggest enabler. Mm. And she brought him vodka until he drank himself to death in his bedroom. Mm. Okay. I wish that there were things that I would have said to him that I didn't say, because I was a little earlier in recovery than him, but I felt like I'd seen some things in him and I didn't say them. So now if I see something in somebody, or if something needs to be said or something needs to be done, I just make sure that I do it, because I may not get another chance to see him, because this, what we do, I feel like I'm in the trenches. This is warfare. It's the war on drugs, whatever you want to call it, but I'm in the trenches, and I may not get a chance to see any of these guys that I spend so much time with. All it takes is one relapse, man. This stuff plays for keeps for real now.
Yes.
So try to say what I need to say and, you know, hope for the best.
Yeah, so it's lowering the expectation, but you still have, but still holding on to the hope that they would, something would change. But I understand that, like, especially early when you kind of pour into somebody and you're like, okay, here's everything I did. Mm-hmm. Here's how I did it. And it worked for me. And I'm pretty sure if you do this, it's going to work for you. And then, you know, for whatever reason, they don't do it, or it just doesn't work, or they, you know, and you kind of go, damn.
Yep.
And it's crushing, right? And so to lower the expectation and say, well, I'm going to give you everything I got, but I'm not going to expect, like, the result of it is not up to me, right?
Yep.
Yeah. That's tough. Yeah. So one of the things that prompted our show tonight.
Hi, guys.
And I wanted to preface, like, start with that, this what I think is like original causes and conditions or something like that, right? Like, there's something that's innate within most of us in recovery, or most of us addicts, that sense of not belonging, that difficulty of relating to the world and to others, and to feel true connection. And then we go through the journey of wilding out, and then we stop. You stop using the substance, you stop drinking, you stop hanging out in those places, right? And tell me what prompted our, because we had a conversation, and this is what prompted this episode, this topic.
Mm. Well,
I'm gonna let you tell it, and if you don't tell it true, I'm gonna tell it for you.
Well, I consider Christian one of my OGs in this recovery thing, man. He really, the first time he met me, he just told me all about me, and that's hard to do. So I, of course, went against what everybody told me to do and got into a relationship early in recovery. I've got 8 months clean. It's funny with these expectations, because, like, really, that's what I did. That's where I set myself up right there, was the expectations. I expect you to do what you're going to say. And that, and as I was sitting here listening to you think, I was thinking to myself, like, man, it really sucks that I am going to have to lower my expectations, but I got to, because people do suck, bro. Like, I suck at one point. I think I'm awesome now, but which is why I don't understand what this void is, which we're going to get to. Yeah. So I called you about something completely unrelated, and you just asked me, like, what's up with you? You okay? And I mean, like, I told him, I was like, man, you know, I'll be honest with you, dude. I was just leaving church. And you ever go to church and, like, you feel like there's nobody else there, or there's just, like, a light like this, you know, and the pastor's just looking at you?
Yeah.
That was that day for me. And he was, like, literally – and it was so crazy because whenever I was walking into church, I knew that that was going to happen. I felt the Spirit was fixing to talk to me. And so I called Christian, and I told him, I was like, man, I ain't going to lie to you, bro. Like, my spirit's – my heart's been broken a little bit. My spirit's been broken, you know. And so me and this chick, man, you know, we went hard, you know. Like, I don't know if it's – you know, I just did a lot of prison time. I don't know if it's sensory deprivation or I just – what I don't know what it was, but like, bro, you really know better than that, Reeves. But you know, I like to go the other way. So really, I got my heart broken, but I broke my own heart. You know, she ain't even really do nothing wrong except for maybe not do what she said she was gonna do. But her reason for that was she was early in recovery too, and like, bro, I got to give myself a chance. God keeps taking everybody from me that I put before him. You know, one of the things.
She told you that?
Yeah, she told me that.
Yeah.
And bro, I can't, like, she and I, one of the bonds that we had was a trauma bond. The girl that I was supposed to be with and her dude died on the same day. Like, a chick that I was, like, on and off with for years and, like, had been clean this whole time. The whole last 2.5 years I was in prison, you know, I got out, she got high one time, and, like, I was actually thinking about this when you said something. I can't remember what you said. That would just do one more, man. Like, you got to say something, man. I go back and I look at these messages. Like, I FaceTime. You know, you got to follow my squirrel. I'm sorry, but I FaceTimed with her. I saw that she had relapsed. She got high, and I was like, man, bro, I can't see you like this. I hung up on her. The last time we ever talked, she died that night. Mm. So like, I keep going back and reading this message that I sent her, like, girl, I'm sorry I hung up on you. I want to talk to you. I want to be there for you. Because she was telling me, like, dude, I'm going to get right. Listen, man, that fentanyl is real out there right now, bro, and they putting it on everything. And so, you know, this girl, and she's younger than too, she told me, she was like, dude, I got to give myself a shot. I got to give God a shot. This is the season in my life that's supposed to be a breakthrough. And one of the things that broke my heart the most is like, man, bro, I really care about this girl. So I'm not even going to push. I'm not even going to push the issue because I've always been somebody like, I'm going to press. I'm going to put the pressure down. I'm going to push the issue. But yeah, like, it is a new season in my life too where I'm going, well, you're right. Like, damn, how can you argue with that?
Yeah.
Like,
why do you think all the mentors in your life, you know, the men in your life, were trying to keep you from that experience?
Because I needed to work. My sponsor told me. My sponsor's a good friend of mine, but he draws that line, homeboy and sponsor. He told me, bro, as your sponsor, you know what I'm about to tell you. Mm-hmm. First year, I'm not telling you don't go do what you do with a female, but bro, don't do all that extra stuff. Work on you, Reeves, and like, I told him, as your sponsee and your homeboy, ain't nobody trying to hear that. I love her, Jerry. You know, like, come on, bro. And even me, I knew, man. I knew, but like, you know, lesson learned. See what it is. But
it's also the best case scenario for how that could have worked out, right? Like, that she probably had a sponsor in her ear and got tired of hearing it and decided to just listen.
You know, right? No, that's not that you would think that, but no, that wasn't it. Her sponsor was cool with it.
No.
And like, I'm gonna stay away from that part because okay, that's like, you know,
yeah.
Like, I don't want to put her in her, like, she's probably watching right now anyway. I'm just kidding. I like,
so one of the things I think that, like, why, and it's hard for me to relate because I was married when I went into rehab and I was still married when I got out of rehab, right? That's pretty amazing. Everybody in rehab was getting served divorce papers, right?
Yeah.
So it's hard for me to kind of relate to what that feels like early on, like wanting to have that kind of relationship with somebody. But I do know, like, one, like what we say, and the reason why we say it is we say it's because you don't even know who you are yet.
Right, facts.
and you haven't worked on yourself yet. You haven't done that soul tending to really understand who you are.
Yeah.
And then to bring another person in that, it's kind of like, it what it does is you're like trying to circumvent that soul work by putting a person in place there to make you feel better so that you don't have to do the work.
And where the conversation kept going, what was really what started this was the idea for this podcast was I said to you, the owner of my program told me, he's like, bro, like, so after that happened, I'm at a phase in my program where I don't have to ask for pass. I can just hit him up and be like, hey, I'm going to stay out tonight. And I got Life 360. He saw where I was at and he was like, dude, what are you doing? Why are you at that hotel? I'm like, well, I'm not getting high, bro. You know, and he was like, man, you're trying to fill a void. And the ego in me wants to be like, no, I'm not. I love me. And I do love this me that I'm just getting to know. Mm-hmm. But like, then it was one girl and then it was another girl. And like, what is this void and how do I figure it out? And I went to some of these same people. Is it, my sponsor said it might be instant gratification. We don't have dope anymore. So is it an instant gratification? Another one of them said, bro, it's the feel good factor. You know, you're with a beautiful woman, you feel good. You one of your homeboys, y'all vibing, laughing, kiki and ha-ha, and you feel good. But really, what you said, bro, I keep hearing the words personal connection. So one of my other homeboys was like, bro, can you go to the mountains into a cabin without your phone for a week? Man, hell no. I'm going to walk down the mountain and try to find somebody, doesn't it? But
yeah. I'm being honest. I shouldn't think it feels horrible, but that sounds like torture for me, to be honest with you.
That, man, I would literally walk down the mountain and try to find a person.
I already talked to myself crazy on the 8 hours I'm alone during the day. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good question, though, right?
What is the void? How do I find it?
Yeah.
And somebody, one of my people told me, they were like, bro, you just need to concentrate on doing the next right thing. And I feel like I do the next right thing in every situation that I'm, you know, and I've never done that. And I love that. I literally geek on that. Mm-hmm. Like, I love being a good person. I've been a special kind of piece of shit my whole life. And, but like, what is it, you know? Like, and that was just out of character for me to want to get into a relationship anyways.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think what I said is that you don't know how to connect with yourself.
No, but how do I figure that out?
Well, that's what we're going to talk about.
Well, let's talk. Y'all guys go. I'll be
going. Yeah. And when we were talking about it, we need a sane person to help us.
Yeah. Yeah. He's.
And then I told Jason he was the sane person, and he laughed just like this. Yeah. So you're getting to be kind of on the outside, yep, looking in, you know, and this idea of connecting to self, right? And being at peace, right? And I can't think of a specific scriptural reference to go to, but I can say that when I look at the life of Jesus, I see somebody who's at, for the most part, at peace with him, who he is, right? And, you know, there's a couple moments where he's wrestling, right? And thankfully we have that recorded to know that. But for the most part, he knew what he was here for. He knew what he was doing. And he wasn't, you know, affected by the status quo and all of the external influences and stuff like that. So when you think about this, like connecting to self, how have you done that in your life? And what have you witnessed in other people?
Okay, so I guess what comes to mind is, I mean, I knew back in probably early 2000, 2001, exactly what my life was going to look like as far as my career. And then I didn't accomplish any of that, right? So I kind of ran from it a little bit, and I still feel like I'm going in that direction, but, and it doesn't really even matter what it is. But, you know, I've worked in recovery quite a bit, at No Longer Bound and now here. But, I think whenever I start trying to insist on who I want to be and who I'm going to be, rather than just, I guess, laying down and letting God have it, you know, when I start making decisions, I get in trouble. But, so I had 11 years of sobriety, 11 years and 6 or 8 or 10 months, something like that, and started drinking again. So then stayed drunk for about 9 years, got a divorce, got sober, lost a pretty successful career. But I lost it really quickly. As soon as I had made the decision, I'm really done drinking, everything in my life just really changed. I had started a divorce process back in like October, and then was all the way divorced actually on February 14th. So it didn't take long.
Happy Valentine's.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of what she said. I can remember having these conversations with God, kind of like this tug of war deal. And, you know, I was 50 when I got divorced. And so I had all my 50-year-old friends getting divorced, and they're all chasing 25-year-old girls around on Instagram or whatever, you know, all that. And it's
the old guy in the club.
And, but they were, you know, and they're bragging because they're being successful. It's like, yeah, you're 50. You should be able to manipulate any 25-year-old into anything, right? You really should. And if you can't, you're not.
At this point in life,
you're not one of my friends. Yeah. If you can't manipulate that, then we can't talk. But, I mean, I'm serious.
Yeah, okay.
But I was having this conversation with God, and I'm like, you know, I don't want to be this guy. I really don't want to be this guy. And I don't want to have I don't want to have sex outside of marriage. And it's like, I'm 50 years old. I got 3 kids. I got 2 ex-wives. You know, if I don't ever date again, I guess that's fine. I really am just done, right? And I'm in it. I mean, I surrendered that, and I started moving forward with my recovery. And there's a girl that I had known. Her name is Donna. I had known her from church, and we grew up together, and her parents and my parents are good friends, and we're always friends. And next thing you know, we start talking, and we wound up getting married. So I'm on my third wife now, and final, my third and final wife.
She's back. But, she's here right now.
She's here.
Shaking the shit out of her head. Like, yes, it is.
Yeah, it's like this. But, you know, I didn't have to deal with the relationship thing. I got this incredible friendship with this female, this wonderful woman that God just gave me. Mm. You know what I mean? And it was the last thing that I ever expected. And but the biggest compliment that she'll say it like kind of like this, but one of the biggest compliments she ever got was when I shared at some point in time, it was probably in a meeting, but you know, Donna was a whole entire person when I met her. Mm. She knew who she was. She knew where she was going. I didn't need her in my life. She didn't need me in her life. We just really enjoyed each other's company, and it was totally a God thing. There's no doubt in my mind.
Yeah.
And I mean, just no doubt. So I don't know why I said all that, but there's lots of saying, you know, pink and green or whatever. It's, you know, that's what we're going to fall to. Mm-hmm. But if I don't know who I am, I got no business trying to be a big part in somebody's life. I mean, I didn't know who I was, and I was raising kids. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I got kids that need some healing still.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, you can make amends, but, I mean, the damage is done. And my kids are great. They're not like damaged, running around crazy. But you know, there's still things to overcome in our relationship. And knowing who I am, figuring out who I am, knowing which direction I'm going, that doesn't mean I've arrived by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, I work my program. I feel like I work a pretty good program. I mean, I have regimented deals that I do every day, they're going to happen.
Yeah. And that doesn't make you, it proves that you know yourself, and you know that you need to work a program to maintain a reasonably happy life, right?
I got away from recovery for just a few months after 11 years, and within a few months I was drunk again.
Yeah.
So yeah, it doesn't take long for me.
Yeah. So you know,
I know that
yourself.
I proved it.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Yeah. Well, I think it's like, thank you for sharing that. And you said a few things, you know, I think like, yeah, two healthy individuals who have done that work can build a beautiful life together now, right? Because there's enough. And then you two grow together, and then there's new things.
Mm-hmm.
you're not who you were when you met, and so it's always evolving. It's a beautiful thing. But when somebody has done that work, and you know, like in, you know, with my wife, we were very young when we had kids and all that stuff, and it just got good Saturday for last. You know what I'm saying? So it's been hard. Not really. It's been. But the longer we stay together, and the longer that what it really is like when I'm, the more that I do the work and grow, and that she does her own work, and we're able to kind of grow separately, you know. And I think I've shared it on the show, but when we got married, you know, they do that candlelight ceremony, you know, you light the candles, and then you take the two candles and you light the center candle, right? The two become one. And then I remember the pastor was like, don't blow out your own candle, though.
Oh,
I thought, well, what do you mean don't blow out my candle?
Still you know? Be you.
But that's what he said. He said, you're still going to be you, and she's still going to be her. And it was almost like, you know, sound weird, but it's almost like a weird prophecy, you know, of like, you still have to walk your own path. You're going to have this together, but you have to walk your own path. And when I look back at our life and our relationship, I see that. I see that we've had to, you know, and, but there's this thing in me, right, that's like, fix me. I want you to fix me. I'm hurt. I'm this. I'm that. Fix me. And it's taken me a long time to go, you know, I was talking to a guy today, and he's like, why is it that she needs to validate your emotions? They're your emotions. Why do you need somebody else to tell you that it's okay to have that emotion, right? Well, that's a great freaking question. That's why we're going to be meeting every week, because I need to learn that. I need to learn to be able to feel that thing. And the problem is like when I feel an emotion, I either completely ignore it or deny it, or I'll validate it to the point of like over.
Yeah. I do the same thing.
Right? Yeah, like, oh, I'm mad, so now I can act like a total fool, right? And it's that weird thing of not knowing how to sit in those silent moments with myself, right? Like, and be okay. And, you know, what I'm going to say is there's layers to this, okay? Mm-hmm. So I'm talking to you at this layer here, right? And it may sound like I'm more jacked up than I am, right? But that's just because I've been through a lot of layers, and now I'm at this deeper layer now where I'm going, okay, now I think in a lot of ways I'm able to sit with myself better than most people are. But now there's an awareness to these old patterns and these old thinkings that have been there since way before I got high. And now I get to sit and learn at that new level, right? And that's a beautiful thing about spiritual growth, is it's like we don't get done. You don't really arrive, you know? You can, I've, my experience is that I can become more accepting of my circumstances and my situations, which feels like a good rest stop, you know? And the thing is, sometimes I fall in love with the rest stop. This is it. Okay, cool. We got it. And, you know, spirit, God says, no, we got more places to go. So the other side of this is the cross addiction, right? We see a lot of people kind of do this, and there's like tech. This is like there's some clinical terms of what cross addiction is. Cross addiction, also known as addiction transfer. I'm looking at the audience, see if anyone turns away. or addiction interaction disorder is when a person has two or more addictive behaviors. These addictions can include alcohol or other drugs, but can also include addictions to food, gambling, sex, gaming, or other compulsive behaviors or process addictions. Drug addicts thinking that they can drink, or alcoholics using prescription pills to cope. We were on the phone today or yesterday, and you were telling me about you got two milestones. This month you have a milestone, but you also have another milestone. Just talk a little bit about that.
So like April 30th of 99 was the last time I used hard street drugs. So I've been clean off of hard street drugs for 25 years this year.
Yeah.
And it's coming up April, and it's a big deal. And a lot of times I get stuck on the last few, maybe days specifically that I used. It was really, really, really bad. And so I enter this funk, and I think through being still and just knowing that it's coming, I usually get into a funk right around then. I've just decided that I'm not going to worry about that. I'm going to look at the freedom that came from it, but I'm going to just really intentionally process differently. And that's from working my program in the morning every morning. I mean, that's from sitting down, being still, you know. And then it'll be 5 years on the 22nd. I've been sober this time around. So I've been, you know, the first time I went to an AA meeting was probably like 92.
Oh.
93.
Okay.
And I got 5 years sober, man. That's crazy. You know what I mean? It don't have to be this hard.
Right.
You know, it takes what it takes, but come on, guys.
Well, so, and that's, so talking about kind of cross addiction and kind of like, so you, when you did go back to a substance to make you feel better.
Oh, I was wide
open. But you knew that you didn't want to go back to hard drugs.
Right.
So it was like, well, I'll just drink because that's not as bad as going back all the
way. And I was a really high bottom drunk, man. And I went to a meeting and this old dude was in there. And I shared that. I'm like, I'm kind of worried because I'm a really high bottom drunk. And he said, well, I got good news for you. And he said, if you was a high bottom drunk then, you still are. He said, you can go back out there and be just as miserable as you want to be and be quite successful in the world probably. Mm. So, you know, I mean, I was a really high functioning alcoholic.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
But there was probably
justification. I had night terrors about I was going to wind up killing somebody, right, or going back to crack cocaine. Right. So it was going to be one or the other.
Yeah.
So I was really worried about where I was going. I knew I was on a slippery slope, but I just, I was sick and tired of being miserable. I knew there was an answer. You know, I knew the solution.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what was wrong with me.
Yeah.
I'm an addict.
Yeah.
Once I start, I'm hard to stop.
Yeah. I don't drink Pepsi responsibly. You know what I mean? Like, I'll take everything. If it feels good,
yep.
I want to figure out how can I do this more? I want more of that, right? Yeah. Like I had a friend of mine said, I got the disease of more.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it is, I want more. And the awareness, you know, the program gives us tools to become aware of all these other things.
Mm-hmm.
But we accept other patterns or coping mechanisms as that's okay. You can do that because, well, I mean, you're not dying, right? You're not going to die by going and getting a cheeseburger or whatever, right? Well, cheeseburgers kill more people than, you know, alcohol does, right? But so we kind of are permissive about the early on and picking up other coping mechanisms, which is understandable. But like my experience was like, you know, I immediately became cross addicted, you know, like using pornography as a way to, you know, because the brain don't know it's not cocaine. The brain just knows that the same spot is lighting up when I watch porn than it does when I'm doing cocaine. And so it was really easy. And then my first like real hard drug in high school was meth. And there's a lot of correlation between meth addicts and sex addicts because that same, that whole brain thing. Yeah. The brain don't know that this isn't drugs. It just knows that we're lighting up the same neural pathway, the same thing, the same pleasure sensors are getting released. And so in a lot of ways, I stunted my own recovery. You know, I remember the counselor was like, well, why don't you just go get like a burger or go get a burrito instead, you know, like, because this is not a good, that's not a good coping mechanism, right? And I'm telling you, man, I mean, years where it's like I was growing in my recovery, but I still had this thing that was, I was getting high on, you know, I had kind of cross addicted. I had switched over to something to kind of sustain me and satiate me. Every time I had a feeling or a thought I didn't like, right?
Well, that's why it's so important to have the ability to stop, just be still for a minute. You know, I get the opportunity to have new guys, quote unquote new guys, come up and spend some time with me in the auto shop sometimes, right? And they come up and they're always like, what can I do? What can I do? What can I do? I'm like, just sit down and shut up, you know, just be still for a minute. Just try that. You know, you don't have to constantly be touching or moving or sweeping or dusting. Be still. Just be still. And if they can do that for a few days, it's crazy the difference. It makes a huge difference because they and we can have conversations about that. You need to stop. You don't always have to be fidgeting and doing something. If you can stop and just let God talk to you, just make an intentional effort. What's God trying to tell me? Jason said, sit down and shut up. What are you trying to show me, God? You know, and that's how you know, all those neural pathways, they're trained. Well, the transformation occurs in our mind. And the Bible says the transformation is we're transformed by the renewing of our mind. Well, how do we renew our mind? When we have that first thought, we take that first thought captive.
Yeah.
Whatever that thought is. I need to sweep. I can't be still. I need to organize something for Jason. And then I can't freaking find it because they organized it for me, you know. So just be still. Trust me. It is okay to be still.
Yeah.
And don't believe everything. That's part of that training. That's part of that, you know, burning a new neural pathway. Just be still for a minute.
Yeah.
It's important.
You're over here shaking your head and wringing your hands.
Because I'm trying to be still. I'm sitting here, I'm like, man, be still. That was one of the first things you asked me when you was like, bro, can you be still? Hell no. I'm trying to twist my hair. I've been over here moving all the time. I'm trying not to move my.
Yeah.
And but I mean, I've been like that from before drugs. Like my mama literally put a leash on me because I can't be still. And I try so hard to be still, bro.
You can do it, man.
I don't
even. Because you're in the middle of this right now, which is what, you know, I mean, I'm glad that you're here.
The being still for me, like the cross addiction, like I've always had a sex thing. I've always, and I never, like, I've had two girlfriends my whole life before this thing we were just talking about. Like, you know, I never liked to lock in, and I was a piece of shit when it came to women. You know, like, I never committed to anything until I committed to this thing right here. But, like, when I got clean, you know, sex and social media, like, you know, and, like, after my breakup with this girl, which was a week and a half ago, you know, one girl, then another girl, then another girl, and I'm really still thinking about her the whole time I'm with all of these, like, you know, and while you were talking a minute ago about being, like, knowing yourself, you know, like, I feel like I know myself, and I know I'm fucked up, and like the being still, the being loud, that's me, man. And like I have tattooed on my finger for myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like just shut the fuck up, bro. I get on my own nerves.
Mm-hmm.
And like they say it'll get better. I'm waiting on it. I don't wait well at all. But you know, like I do reach out to my network. I do meditate. Like, I'm so ADHD, bro, I try to go to God, man. I don't know if y'all do this, but, like, I'll be praying, and then, like, 20 minutes later, I'm like, oh, man, I was praying. Let me get back to that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, but the sitting still thing, man, is like, bro, I would give anything. And, like, my ADHD is so bad, I definitely need to do something, but I ain't finna do nothing. Non-narcotic, like, I got Jesus now. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's gonna get better. I'm 8 months clean. Like, I'm just now learning, like, I do know who I am. I do love this me for the first time. And, like, you know, I don't know if, like, and I was talking to another one of my roommates who has a similar background that I do. You know, I know we all dealt with addiction, you know, and I went to some really dark places, man. Last time we were here, I was affiliated for over 20 years. I did things. I have so many wrongs that I'm, you know, I would love to sit here and say, I ain't ashamed of nothing. That's what my story, that made me who I am. And that's going to take me where I'm going and who I'm going to be able to help. But like, man, yeah. You know, like, is that part of why I'm not, is that part of the void, you know, because like, I love this version of me, but why can I not go without, man, this thing been vibrating, bro. I've been wanting to look at it the whole time we've been in here.
Yeah.
Last time you saw me, I gave it to my homeboy that was sitting right here.
Yeah.
Like, what is it, man? Right. How do I find it?
Yeah.
Like, how do I, that God-sized hole that you were talking about, man, cars, clothes, women, drugs, affiliation, and, you know, and when I say that word, I will, like you were talking early, like this community. You know, I wanted a brotherhood, man, since I was a kid. Bro, I got one now.
Yeah.
I got one. I know I can call you. I don't even know this man right here, but I know energy. And I know that's a real dude right there just because of what you told me and, like, these people in this room right here, they might not know me. And you know, I used to go into meetings and stuff and people be like, oh, I love you, man. I'm like, man, you don't love me. You don't know me. But, bro, I know now they know that struggle and they love the person fighting that fight, man.
Right.
Yeah. And I got people I can call for money, help my mama move, make coffee, and just listen to me, blah, you know, yeah. And that means something, bro. And, yeah. Like, that sense of camaraderie and brotherhood and real love, man, I love that. Like, I geek on God and I geek on being sober.
Yeah.
And so, like, but why can I not be okay with just priests?
Yeah.
Like, what is it?
Yeah.
Like, I went to a really dark place.
That's the beginning, right? That question, because it took you this long to get to the point to be able to ask that question. And the question, it's beautiful to have the question, because most of us walk around don't even ask that question. The fact that you're even asking the question is proof that you're on a path, right? And you know, I tell people who have a hard time sitting and meditating, there are a lot of different ways to meditate. And one, the way I got into meditation was the first time I tried to meditate, I had a panic attack, right? So I'm like, well, I don't think this is what my meditation is supposed to do. And someone told me about a walking meditation. So a walking meditation is you leave your phone behind and you take a walk and start just to walk around the block. When you walk, you pay attention. Am I stepping with my left foot or right foot? That's left foot. What's my left hand doing? Oh, it's moving here. My right hand's moving here. And because the thing is we have this, what we call like a monkey mind or thinking mind, right? Or judgment mind, right? This is the enemy of Christ, is this mind that's constantly, right? And so when you're doing a walking meditation, that thinking mind has a lot of things to pay attention to. It's listening, is there a car coming? It's watching, is there a freaking deer or a snake because your mind's doing all this, right? This is what your mind's supposed to do. It's supposed to keep you safe. So when you're doing a walking meditation, it gives your thinking mind all this stuff to do and paying attention to what the step. Am I stepping on my left with an in-breath or an out-breath? Am I stepping on my right with an out-breath? What's my breath doing? Where am I? And so as you're doing all that, that thinking mind gets lost in all that, and you'll find that what I would call Christ consciousness, right? The God consciousness gets a little chance to kind of pop his head out and go, oh, look at the leaves. And walking meditation is a way for you to enter into meditation, especially someone who's like you and I both are, with this hyperactive, creative thinking mind. Walking meditation is a great way to enter into meditation. So I would give you a strong suggestion to just, you know, take that walk, but being intentional about it. Leave your phone behind. And don't try to set off and do a 7-mile walk. Just do a walk around the block with that real intentional mindset. And I think you'll tap into that. And that's what, at least that was my experience. Because I tapped into that peace and that little, there's a little river, you know. And I tapped into that little river. And then I learned that when I would sit. But I'm going to tell you right now, like, I am out of practice of meditation right now. Yeah. I'm out of practice. And I'm having a hard time sitting. You know, so I'm telling you, when I need to take my ass for a walk too.
Sound like my dad used to tell me, do as I say, not as I do, boy.
Yeah, right. So I don't know if we've solved anything or if we've been helpful in any way. Hopefully we've been at least relatable in this conversation and helping people understand, like, this is the walk, right? We grow, we take a couple steps forward, we make a mistake, we come back. And as long as you don't get high, as long as you don't go back to the bottom, as long as you don't go back to committing crimes, everything else we can come back from.
Mm-hmm. So, and, bro, and you know what, man? Like, the last 2 weeks have been, you know, I'm at a point now in my spiritual connection and just in my the level of gratitude that, like, I literally thank God for sending me to prison 3 times for the lessons, even in the pain. And, bro, throughout the whole time, not once did I think about getting high. Not once did I. Now, I always, it's going to sound horrible, I always think about hurting people. I have a violent mind. But Now, I knew I wouldn't do that. And that, to me, was the only comforting thing in the pain, in the bullshit, like that, and like that I reached out to all the people and that I have the people that I can reach out to. Bro, I ain't think about putting no dope on it one time. And that's crazy for me, because I was the addict that, man, I didn't get high to celebrate. I didn't get high because I was sad. I got high for both. Hell yeah, I'm happy. Let's get high. I'm down. Let's get high. I don't like to feel. I feel really hard. I hurt hard. I love hard. And, bro, I was hurting, but, man, I ain't think about putting no dope on it one time.
Yeah. That's huge. That's growth. Yeah.
And that's the first time I've ever not, you know.
What's the saying? Ain't a problem. Drink will make better, or what's that? Do you know it?
There's nothing in the world that a drink would improve. I can't think of anything that I could pour alcohol on and make it better. Something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about?
I don't know. Someone out here maybe knows it. You guys know it?
It's all the same.
Yeah. Don't drink.
Don't drink.
Problem so bad that alcohol won't make worse.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's all the same.
There's not a problem so bad alcohol won't make worse. Well, I want to thank you guys for being here. Thank you to the in-studio audience. Thank you to Zach running the ones and twos, Leslie Quality Control. And, you know, if you need help and you're going through some of this stuff, just reach out. Contact at The Most High Show. And if we can't help you, we'll connect you with somebody who can. So thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. This is The Most High Show.